go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
Ben, let's just say that you're in a very remote location. I mean, really, really remote.
Okay, like maybe the Australian outback?
Yeah, let's say like you're in a town where there's one road in, one road out.
Okay.
Okay, and maybe it's like a two-lane road. I'm just trying to tell you, it's a desolate region, right? A desolate area.
Gotcha.
But you still have to supply the town, you know, that one road supplies, I guess, or that one road feeds.
Oh, yeah. People got to eat. There also has to be fuel.
Exactly. Livestock needs, you know, whatever you happen to need. Anything for the general store, whatever you've got, mm-hmm. right? How would you do it?
Well, we have a road, mm-hmm. so I guess the best thing to do would be to transport things over the road, assuming there's no waterway or anything.
Mm-hmm.
That road is our only connection to the world,
sure.
right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so...
Yeah, there's no railway, no anything like that. No airfield.
Okay.
Nothing like that.
We ruled everything out.
Sure.
So I guess the only thing you could do would be to haul those materials over the roadway.
Yeah, but you would want to do it relatively efficiently, right?
Right, because it would be so far away that it wouldn't be efficient at all to just have people, you know, piling stuff in their trunk and driving on a day-by-day basis.
No, or taking, you know, 50 trucks in and out every day, you know, one to deliver produce, one to deliver, I don't know, furniture,
building
whatever.
Materials.
Yeah, building materials or fuel or whatever it happens to be. But, you know, that would be a lot of time, effort, energy, just a lot of wasted effort and resources, I guess.
So
right?
you have to get the most bang for your buck transport-wise. So ideally, in these kind of situations, if we remember after the railways were completed in the United States, after the Continental Rail, then that became the best way to supply these desolate towns.
Yeah, sure. But in a situation like we're talking about, you know, and these do happen, you know, there are places that can't be supplied by rail, can't be supplied via waterways of any kind.
Sure.
And this roadway may be the only way in and out. It becomes very, very efficient to use multi-trailer trucks. So trucks that carry more than one load, they can carry different items. They could carry, one fuel tanker and a box truck that has a box trailer rather that has, I don't know, building materials, you know, mm-hmm. like wood and nails and, you know, whatever else they need, screws. Also, you know, any livestock trailers, things like that. This could be multi-use. It could be many different things. And what we're talking about are called road trains.
Yes. Trains on the road. Now, people in the United States, Scott, are probably familiar with this concept. If you've ever seen a tractor trailer with two trailers,
mm-hmm.
then in the United States, that might be your closest comparison to a road train on the highway.
Exactly.
But what we're talking about is in Tennessee what they would call a whole nother other thing.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to say it. And you know what? Let's get this out of the way, too, because it was a suggestion from a listener.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I think we've mentioned road trains in the past. I'm pretty sure that we have a long time ago.
Yeah, in passing.
In passing, yeah, but not a full episode. And recently, a new listener, his name is from Facebook. His name is Mark Robinson. And Mark wrote and said, "I've discovered your podcast just a few weeks ago. I love it, but I've managed to listen to pretty much every single episode during my long shifts at work to keep up the good work. I'm not sure if you've covered this before, but... I'd like to hear a podcast on road trains because I think that'd be pretty cool. I'd like to know a little bit more about the history and technical specifications of these awesome machines and the trailers." And then Mark is from Bridgend, South Wales, UK. Oh, and it also says, "Thanks for making my night shifts a lot easier to bear." So, Mark, I hope we can help you out there in the night shift area by keeping you entertained with this episode on road trains. And we'll do our best. We've got a ton of notes, I'll tell you that.
Right.
And these things, you know, they're pretty fascinating. And I started to write, and I told you this yesterday, Ben. I was writing, and you can see my notes across the table here.
Yeah.
They're way too complex to get to everything. And they're far more than I really need to, because I got to a point where I was writing and writing, and the writing's getting smaller and more kind of pinched at the bottom of the page. And I realized what we're talking about here is just really, really cool giant trains of semi-trailers crossing continents.
Yeah, and I think that in no way discounts the amazingness of these. Just a sidebar before we go on. It is, I noticed that your notes today look a little bit like, did you see the original Willy Wonka?
Yes.
Remember when they have to sign that contract?
Oh, yes.
Before they go in and the print gets smaller and smaller and smaller?
It's a little bit bizarre. Yeah, it's a little bit like that. And you know, there's no way I'm going to get to all this. And I figured out this kind of, it's kind of, you know, it's good to have it in my head, I guess.
Yes.
I don't know how many questions I can answer on the fly, but I'll try. Mm-hmm. And if we get to something that, you know, I sound like I'm given a little bit, a little bit more difficult read, I suppose. I'm probably squinting and trying to read my own notes. But I think we should just get right back into it and say that these road trains are just exactly what they sound like.
Yeah.
They're like a train that's on the highway, and there's some special needs that these trailers have in order to work, because they don't all work. It doesn't work if you just have a bunch of regular old, plain old trailers like you would find, you know, in any lot.
That's an accident waiting to happen.
It really is. These are very specific, very, very special equipment that's put together in such a way that they operate or they work correctly on tight turns, going through sometimes some city areas, but not very often. Usually it's remote locations, right?
Yeah, usually it's remote locations, the straightaways. Now, we should go ahead and first establish that while these are, while some of the biggest ones are actually the largest ones are in Australia, rather, the longest ones, this is not just an Australian thing. These are on multiple continents, and there's some history behind this.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of history. I mean, these things are massive. Some of them have 60 tires.
Yeah.
60 tires to maintain and handle. I mean, and they can travel up to like 3,000 kilometers at a shot, you know, between one location and the next. Mm-hmm. So imagine like one end of Australia to the other. And I keep mentioning Australia because they're the ones who primarily use these things. As far as like in the outback, I guess, you know, in the long distances where it's very desolate, very open. But we'll find as we go through some of the countries, regions, continents that use them, there's a lot of variation to this. Now, you talked about history here, and I'm gonna search for my notes, talk amongst yourselves. Okay, I found it. Found it. Okay, so these go all the way back, Ben, all the way back to the 1850s, believe it or not.
Which is amazing.
I know. We're talking like the Crimean War usage, like this era, like around that time. They actually had, I guess it'd be more like horses pulling long trains of wagons.
Oh, I see.
And that's probably like the start of this whole thing.
And it was supply lines.
Exactly. It was for military use, right? And then kind of, we'll jump way ahead here, but around, 1907, there's something called the Renard Road Train in the United Kingdom that shows up in some photographs you can find.
Mm-hmm.
I think that thing is still around. I think it's in a museum somewhere.
Renard Road Train.
Yeah, it's called the Renard Road Train. And, I believe recalling correctly, I think this one had solid tires. I think it had no rubber on it or anything like that. It was just but it was the first road train, the first one that was designed to be used on the road to carry things long distances.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started using these traction engines. And that's kind of like what this Renard road train is like. But the traction engines really were, if you can imagine like what looks like a steam engine with wheels that have rubber attached to them, like the big metal wheels that have rubber attached.
Oh, yeah,
to them.
Okay, yeah.
Almost like, you know, the early tractors. The giant early tractors.
Mm-hmm.
They would pull wagons with people in them. They would pull wagons with supplies, with materials for war,
mm-hmm.
materials for building, materials for, whatever happened to be livestock.
Yeah.
Lots of different uses. So, you know, we're kind of getting up to about where the 1930s happened here, where, that's kind of an odd way to put that, but where the modern road train comes in, and this is where like kind of the version that we're talking about really becomes important. Kurt Johansson, he's the recognized inventor of the modern road train.
Kurt Johansson.
Johansson. I hope I'm saying that right. Johansson. I think I am. But he had this task of transporting bulls, and I think that he was only able to carry something like 20 or something like that. You know, a kind of a low number of bulls, but he had to carry them like 200 miles. Again, this is in Australia. Very remote location. Had to carry them 200 miles. He's carrying 20 bulls at a time. Well, he got this challenge from somebody. And I would guess that it's the person that he was delivering to. I would assume, right?
Right.
Now, how many of these things start with a challenge, by the way? Lots of things.
So many great innovations, not just in the automotive field, but in engineering in general, start with a challenge.
I mean, it could be like, I'll bet you $50 you can't do this.
Uh-huh.
And then someone will spend years and thousands of dollars in order to win that $50 bet, right?
There's no way you can make it across the United States in 100
So his challenge really was to, he was challenged to build a truck that could carry 100 head of cattle instead of 20. So five times as many. And, you know, again, this remote location, how are you going to do it? That's a pretty big load because at this point, 20 is kind of the max. It was the heaviest load. It was the biggest trailer you could find, et cetera, right? So it took him about 2 years. And he finally got this road train running. But get this, Ben, he was inspired by the tracking abilities of something called the government road train. Now, the South Australian government, just prior to this, had something that they called the government road train. And they hauled freight and supplies from South Australia to North Australia. But it had these really unique tracking characteristics. It had these wagons that all of the axles were on pivots. All of them could steer.
Ah, I see. This is a huge piece of modern road trains.
Yeah, they call it a self-tracking trailer. And the self-tracking trailers made it possible to make any turn, really, because if you were to make a turn in a regular semi or regular trailer one after the other, eventually you're going to clip the apex of that corner. You're going to have the thing, you know, hopping over the curb or whatever it is. And I'm assuming that where he was going, we're talking about probably boulders and things like that in the way, cactus or whatever.
Right. There's
mountains.
This is, again, let's keep in mind that this is a period in time where paving technology in general just wasn't as prevalent or as there.
Exactly.
Honestly.
And we're probably talking about somewhere in the middle of Australia, which even to today, this part of the world may or may not have any kind of asphalt laid down.
So there's a great way to think about this. Let's go ahead and let the cat out of the bag here when we talk about how long these things can get. Is it okay? I want to jump ahead.
No, that's all right. I mean, just Kurt Johansson, father of the modern road train, around the 1930s.
Because he got challenged.
Because he was challenged, and he developed his own self-tracking trailers.
Yes, and the reason these self-tracking trailers are important, as we said, the turning aspect here would be impossible to do safely without self-tracking trailers. Now, we're talking about, when we say trailers, the question is, hey, Scott and Ben, how many trailers are you talking about? Oh, my friends, we are talking about six. Six trailers, now granted, of varying sizes. And there is a reason for that, but that is the largest amount of trailers. So that would be one of the longest trains you would see. And without these self-tracking trailers, I mean, I don't mean this in a derogatory way at all. Scott, these things are beasts.
Yeah, they're giant. I mean, it would not be able to operate. It wouldn't be able to make a single turn. This would be something for a straight shot, and that would be it.
Right.
So these self-tracking trailers, and I really do want to talk about that in just a minute.
Yeah.
As far as, like, you know, developments for warehouse use and things like that, because it's really important. But in order to be able to make any kind of turn without completely clipping the corner, you have to have these self-tracking trailers, and we'll describe it in a minute. But they're really, if you look up the different types of road trains, I can see there's about nine types that are listed here in front of me, and variations of these as well.
Yes.
The descriptions of them, Ben, I'll tell you, I had a little difficulty kind of understanding what they were talking about because, and it's a very visual thing. You almost have to look this up for yourself to find out, but, the nine variations, and I won't go through all of them, but they have things like a B double, a B triple, double road train, and then there's a variation of that called the pocket road train. There's an AB triple, a BAB quad. It just goes on and on. I mean, a 2AB quad. There's all these different variations, and if you visually see them, it helps you understand. And some of these are half-length trailers. Some of them are, most of them are on a fifth wheel type assembly where, you know, it's that, that horseshoe looking thing at the back of the, everybody's seen that in the back of a semi, right?
Yeah. It's the hitch, essentially.
The connection, the pivot point for the semi trailer. And that's probably the best way to put it. And the one that you mentioned, the longest one, which actually has a total of seven bodies, I guess, or seven cargo areas, but only six trailers.
Yes.
You're right, six trailers.
Very good point, yeah.
Because on a body in six, which is what they call this, a body in six, which makes perfect sense, it does not have a fifth wheel set up, not an attachment like that. It's actually it's a body, or rather a box that's mounted to a truck frame. Mm-hmm. So everybody's seen a box truck frame. Then you have trailers after that, six trailers after that of varying size. There's always this one in the middle that's kind of a dolly trailer. And, again, there's all kinds of dollies and, you know, this gets very, you can get very wrapped up in the jargon that goes along with this. And I don't know if we really want to do that, but, just to look up body in six or look up, powertrain. If you don't get, you know, some information about an engine and transmission, look up powertrain as far as like, hauling. I suppose.
Well, one thing that, again, I want to emphasize here is for anybody who would like to learn more about these classifications, the best thing to do is to go find a visual depiction. There's a great diagram. Scott, is that the one from the Dark Roasted article?
This is not. No,
this is
no,
a
this
different
is, one. I found this one somewhere else.
Okay, I've seen this one as well, but these abound, and these are a great and fast, quick and dirty way to figure out the differences, because when you're just looking at a list of the names of the classifications, it very rapidly becomes an alphabet soup.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? I need to say this. I think maybe you already mentioned this, Ben, but the body in six design, now the one that has, you know, seven cargo haulers.
Right.
This is enormous. I mean, it's a huge, huge thing. The thing is that it only operates on private property.
Yes.
This is way too long to be operate on public roads.
Even in Australia.
And I've got it, you know, just real quickly off of this. Even in Australia, you know, where they use these all the time and all these variations where you have maybe as many as four, three, two, some of these variations have a lot of different setups, but like as many as four trailers behind them. A lot of times when they get to an urban area, they will stop at these switching stations and they will unhook the trailers, hook them up to individual carriers, individual tractors, so like semis, and then haul them through the if that's their final destination. They can either haul them through and then hook them up again at another place, another switching station, I guess.
Yeah.
Or they can haul them to, the urban area, individually like they would, because it's tough to negotiate a city, even with a single semi-trailer.
I am so glad you said that, because that is a huge deal, and we would be remiss if we didn't say it. Yeah. You guys, these road trains are not barreling through, the downtown part of Perth or something, There are zoning laws that are there and should be there, frankly, for safety. Scott, I also want to point out that that when we say these are the largest vehicles or the longest, we mean they're the longest street legal or road legal. That's an important qualification.
True, and that's why we mentioned the body in six on private property only.
Right.
And when we say private property, it's probably like these could be used by ranchers.
Miners.
Miners is a big one.
Miners is probably the primary.
People hauling wood or lumber. Maybe not in Australia. I'm not sure if that's really something. But mining is big there.
Right.
And building supplies, I guess, if you have to haul them from one part of your property to the next.
Heavy machinery is another huge one.
That's a big one, Ben.
It gets a little bit, what's the word for this, Scott? It gets a little meta, because you can see road trains hauling road train pieces.
Yeah.
It's like that old exhibit joke on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that?
And they do stack up as well. Like they stack them high. So, there's even more variation to that, because they call that stacking up. And, it just gets really, really complex. Now, we mentioned that they're in a lot of different countries and regions.
Yes.
Continents.
Yes.
And you said they're not really, using these in city, for city hauling. They break them down into individuals for that, because it's just more manageable, right?
Right.
But when they're out on these desolate roads, now, Ben, this is surprising to me. In Australia, we'll start with Australia, because that's the big user.
Yeah.
Up until 2007, the speeds of these things were unlimited. Which I find hard to believe, but it's true.
Yes, that also, that got me, and I checked a couple of sources for because I didn't believe like the first two or three.
Yeah.
Just because it sounded like one of those factoids. You know, the definition of a factoid is something that is not actually true.
Sure.
But it's repeated so often it becomes treated as fact. And I thought, surely that's a factoid. Why would you want something like that going in at an unlimited speed? But it is, at least as far as I could see, it is confirmed, and these things still run the road because other drivers move out of the way.
Oh, they absolutely. They rule any kind of road that they're on. I mean, you have to move out of the way because they're not going to be able to swerve. They're not going to be able to go off to the...
It's just like a train.
Off the edge. You treat it exactly... You're right. You treat it exactly as if a train were headed your way. And I guess it's scary when one of these things passes you because I mentioned 2007 they're unlimited. Now they're limited to 130 kilometers per hour, which is still then 81 miles per hour. That's fast. This is a big, big, heavy piece of machinery coming your way at 81 miles per hour. That's the maximum speed. But from what I hear, it's pretty terrifying when they pass you going the other direction. Really scary when you're driving in a lane and they're passing you.
Yeah, because who knows how long it will take.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but I'm sure that it's blowing around some of the smaller cars.
Oh, yeah.
So we mentioned Australia. They're just the largest country. Actually, they have the largest usage of these. They carry the heaviest loads.
Yeah.
Most of these things are around 80 to 120 tons in weight, but some can be all the way up to 200 tons. So that's just a massive vehicle. Two and three, which they call doubles or triples, are allowed in most of Australia. Man, some of them are just seasonal, I guess. Like if around harvest times,
sure.
Some places will allow doubles and triples that don't normally allow that. So there's a lot of different rules that come into play with these things. You know, weight restrictions, licensing, all those apply all the time. And then, you know, we mentioned the assembly yards. They've got a lot of assembly yards, you know, for these switching locations there.
Mm-hmm.
Canada also is another user of these. They call them something different. They're not always called road trains there. Sometimes they're called long continuous vehicles, or LCVs,
mm-hmm.
or they're called extended length vehicles, or ELVs, or, get this, they're called energy efficient motor vehicles, or EEMVs.
When you think about it, though, I just want to point out, when mm-hmm. you think about it, it's exactly the same as our hypothetical situation earlier. You have a remote place. Very few ways to access it. It is actually much more energy efficient mm-hmm. to have these. I think of them as one-man convoys.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it's not literally just one person driving it, but it really is a marked improvement in efficiency.
It is one person driving it, Ben. It's one operator. They've got these long, long chains. I know it takes more than that to operate. I mean, you know, and there's usually someone with them in the cab just, you know, to make sure everything's going well.
Yeah, that's all I mean.
A navigator, whatever, but, again, back to Canada.
Yes.
There's four types allowed, and then we're getting back into this jargon.
Yeah.
There's turnpike doubles, there's triples, there's what they call a Rocky Mountain double, there's the Queen City triple that's allowed. I mean, there's all these variations in every country, every region, every continent has its own, jargon that they use. So you're gonna have to know what region you're in to look up the right information about what you're looking for. Western Canada is treated differently than the rest of Canada. In this is how strange this gets. British Columbia, for example, they're limited, but doubles are allowed between a certain, you know, location. I think it's Hope and Merritt is where they're allowed to travel between. Alberta, they allow turnpike doubles and sometimes triples on most major highways, mm-hmm. which are huge. Triples huge, by the way. Saskatchewan, divided highways only. So, you know, there's a restriction there for that. The United States, we've got a few here that can be used on public roads, but we're kind of limited to about two trailers and with a dolly, to connect the two trailers. And that's limited to about 63 feet total. So that's not really all that long, 63 feet.
Right. In comparison.
Exactly. And some states even allow three trailers. But it has to be through like less populated states.
That's like Idaho.
Exactly. Montana, Oregon, and places like that, you know, that are wide open spaces, a lot of room to really let it go.
Right.
And turnpike areas, like maybe Ohio, I think northern Indiana has a turnpike.
Mm-hmm.
Those areas, triples are allowed. But again, you have to check it out and make sure that that's still allowed. I mean, you know, the rules change with these all the time, and it's, again, seasonal.
Yeah.
At a lot of times. Europe has a version of this that, you know, Finland, Sweden, Germany, Netherlands, Denmark, Norway.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a 3-year limit on these road trains, which is kind of strange. And they had an 82.8-foot length, restriction. So, you know, that's 20 feet longer than here in the States.
Right.
And that started in 2008, so that's already expired. I don't know why that was a 3-year thing, but I believe it was like a study. Like they were just testing how these heavier loads probably, you know, if they damage the
the pavement,
the surface exactly. Yeah. If they were dangerous as far as accidents go, which I'm sure you know, it's really really tough to stop these things.
It's a feasibility study essentially.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm guessing they're trying to figure out congestion. You know, if it alleviates some traffic, you know, traffic congestion. Mexico allows doubles. But I think that they're starting to change that because they've had a lot of overloading issues down there. So, you know, the people are trying to push those right to the very max, and it's really destroying the roadways and, again, very dangerous.
Also, another interesting point, let me file this under interesting and possibly relevant.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexico City itself is built on an aquifer, and Mexico City is sinking. So the very last thing you would want is, huge population of heavy vehicles.
You don't want a single heavy vehicle traveling over this thing over and over and over again all day long, right?
Right, because it would never be a single heavy vehicle. It would be fleets of heavy vehicles in and out carrying exports.
That's true. You might have fleets of these road trains traveling back and forth, which, man, that's its own problem, right?
I want to, if we can, I'd like to...
I mean, it's very efficient.
It's very efficient. Yeah, sure. It's very efficient till the city sinks.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, they wouldn't be allowed in the city anyway. You know what? That's
no.
a really good point.
Yeah.
I want to go back to South Africa.
Okay.
So we checked out this really cool article that lists various differing types of, I guess we'll call them superlative road trains. You know, the longest, the biggest, the heaviest.
Sure.
And South African road transport warriors. The title alone takes the cake for me. But if you think about some of the tasks that these do, and some of the industries in South Africa, especially mining, mm-hmm. this does make sense. Let me just run through some superlatives for this abnormal vehicle. Which literally, that's the name on the front and
Isn't
back.
That of it. Hilarious? I found that hilarious when I read this. It's labeled abnormal on the front and back.
Yes.
Which is ridiculous, but that's kind of funny.
And that's the front is 160 meters away from the back, just to get into some stats here.
Oh, boy.
It has the largest trailer. It's 338 wheels. It's the trailer alone.
338 wheels.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it the largest on-highway vehicle in the world. It has a 370-ton Siemens generator. That combination load is about 860 tons. It has the way it drives, and this is something I want to get into with you. The way it drives, it has five trucks in one line.
Wow.
So they're making 4,000 horsepower.
Well, this is like a true train. Like when you see multiple engines hooked up to a long load of coal or something like that, right?
Right. And, you know, I know you've seen this picture because we were emailing this article to each other.
Sure.
But, that's a necessity. It's also to some people, maybe the question would be, why don't you just have a single vehicle with a larger engine, right?
Well, I guess I can understand that. Yeah, sure. But, you know, with all these different, see, each one of these driving vehicles, though, carries a payload also.
Yes.
So it's like you're putting engines in the middle of the vehicle and just making it that much more efficient, right?
Yeah.
And is there, I mean, I'm not sure about this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen others that have one single operator, and this is all connected via a drive-by-wire system. This one looks like it's an older system. I doubt that's the case.
I think you're right.
This is more run on like, you know, radio where they're synchronizing like, okay, let's accelerate. You know, that kind of thing. I don't know exactly.
Like fire trucks, the guy at the end saying, okay, we can turn now.
turn left. Yeah. I don't exactly know how that one drives specifically, but I know that some of the newer versions, that have power in the middle as well.
Yeah.
Those are operated, you know, via, automatic transmission. They're connected to an automatic transmission. And that's all connected via a drive-by-wire system, which operates, you know, fluidly with the single operator at the very front. So that's That's probably completely different from the one you're looking at.
Yes, that's a good point. That is some more modern things. I have, speaking of interesting road trains, I have something a little bit conspiratorial that I thought would be fun—a blast from the past.
Sure.
I forgot to put it in the history part of our episode.
Let's hear it.
All right. Secret Nazi technology, my friend.
Oh, really?
You remember this one?
Did you read about this one? I did, but you're right. Yeah.
So, as history fans may know, fans of military history as well. I'm going to go ahead and butcher this pronunciation, but during World War II and in the lead up to World War II, the Nazi regime worked on what's called Wunderwaffen or wonder weapons. And so these would be, this was the R&D that later led to improvements in stuff like aerodynamics and rocketry and so on. Mm-hmm. One of the things that they worked on at this time was a super truck, is what they called it. And you can see the old model, which it's not as long as these other, as these convoys that were actually built. And it was in the planning stages. So people have completed a model of it, but the aim was still the same. Okay, yeah, like here's the partially constructed model.
Well, let me tell you, that's a grainy photograph, the black and white photograph there.
Yeah.
That's a true photograph, isn't it?
That's
somebody
real,
standing next to a full mock-up, the real deal. That probably drives.
Yeah. The idea, they called it half realized. Their aim was different because, you know, as we know, a lot of the engineering innovations in the world start in the military mm-hmm. or in racing.
Out of necessity.
Out of necessity, exactly, Scott. And so this one was designed, more to cross minefields.
Mm.
And it's strange.
So it's heavily armored.
It's heavily armored, which yeah. adds to the weight and probably, if this thing had been completed, then it's pure speculation, but it's quite possible that this would have led to a German line of what would ultimately become road trains. You know?
Sure, yeah, and you know what? These things would have been invaluable to them because they could have loaded up troops, mm-hmm. materials, whatever, drive straight across minefields, right across enemy lines, open up, and there you go. I mean, that could have been devastating. You know, for us. So, man, that could have been quite a weapon of war.
Yeah, it could carry up to 1,520 U.S. tons. So that's 1,370 metric tons.
Wow.
It didn't have the haulage distance limitations that long haul trucks can still have.
Okay.
So that was a blast from the past. If anything, I say that because you know, I've never let relevance or irrelevance stop us from mentioning something cool on the show. But also, I think it really does show that that countries across the world realize the benefit of transporting goods this way.
Understood. That's a cool thing, by the way, because you know they took the grainy photograph that I mentioned from World War II, and there were some drawings, I guess, as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some detailed drawings, like some cutaway type stuff that you know an engineer had drawn, and somebody has built a miniature model of the thing that looks really neat. It's probably worth checking out if you can find it. Again, it's that Dark Roasted Blend article on road trains.
Yeah.
And you know what? I want to talk about the power and go back to the modern versions of this. And I want to talk about
Great.
The engines, and I've got a little bit about, you know, like what a typical semi-truck has, what kind of power, what kind of torque, what kind of, you know, hauling capability. But, first I think I want to tell you about something that, you know, you said completely different, right?
Yeah.
Well, completely, I don't know. Maybe it's still automotive related, but this is something that I was kind of excited about this one. I almost wanted to mention this one right at the very beginning of our podcast, but I held off.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I found a really cool selection on Netflix that I think I want to share with our listeners. And I tell you, it's very dramatic, very very bold in the way that these things are portrayed and stated in this trailer that you'll watch. You know, if you watch that type of thing before you view these things, which I do,
uh-huh.
And I thought, well, I don't know, they're making a lot of bold statements here, but it's called On Any Sunday, and it's from 1971, and I guess it's a documentary. It's rated G, very you know family friendly type thing. It's about motorcycle sport and all the men who ride. But again, I mentioned it's from 1971. This thing has Steve McQueen in it, Ben.
Steve McQueen.
Yeah, they show Steve McQueen in this thing, and as well as many other people at the time, you know, and just a lot of amateurs as well. Not just professionals, but amateurs. But it's all about motorcycle sport, motorcycle riding of all types. I mean, it looks like a little bit of everything is covered here. And the guy that directed it, his name is Bruce Brown. And he also did another thing, and I'm just going to mention this because he did something that was kind of the quintessential surfing movie, which was called The Endless Summer. Not long before this one, he did this one called On Any Sunday, which is about motorcycles, and it's kind of the same thing for motorcycles as this other movie was for surfing. A lot of people feel that it's maybe one of the best motorcycle documentaries I've seen at the time. And man, again, I said it's really, really kind of bold in the way it talks about motorcycle riders and the events that they I guess frequent, maybe, because it goes all over the United States, all over the world, I think.
Wow.
It even includes what they call a muddy and murderous motocross race. The torturous mayhem of the Mexican 1000, which was later to be known as the Baja 1000.
Mm-hmm.
It's that track down the Baja Peninsula that's 1,000 miles long. It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
They do a segment on the Widowmaker, which is a Salt Lake City, Utah, event, which I remember, I think, watching this on ABC Wide World of Sports in the 70s. It's a 600-foot high, 45-degree angle hill that people try to climb. And up until this point, just prior to this film in 1971, in the 7 years prior to that, no one had summited this thing. No one had made it. So it was just an event people try to get close, but they don't make it. It's really amazing to watch. But again, there's a very 1970s feel to this whole thing. The music, the people, the hairstyle, the clothing, the bikes. The bikes are amazing, Ben. It's really, really a cool thing to watch. And again, Steve McQueen makes an appearance through here. It's just a little bit of everything. Motocross, endurance, circle track racing. I think there's even some on ice stuff. Hill climb, drag racing.
Wow.
A little bit of everything. So it's called On Any Sunday. It's from 1971. Definitely worth the Car Stuff listeners' time.
And just so you guys know, if you have not heard our show before or our stuff about Netflix Instant, every time we mention a movie on Netflix Instant or a television show, we're mentioning something that is available to you now today. But wait, you might be saying, I don't have a Netflix membership. Well, no problem. You can go to netflix.com/carstuff and you can sign up for a free trial. You can check out this film. You can check out thousands of others, because we recommend quite a few.
I don't know how many we're up to now, but we've recommended many, many automotive related films for people to watch, or documentaries. It's just a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah, and it counts as work research for us, which is still an amazing gig.
Yeah, it's pretty,
you think about that.
Pretty incredible.
So these are all, availability is subject to change, but these are all available when we double check right before we go on air. So let us know what you think, and please also recommend a movie that you think we and other listeners would like to see as well.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I've got a little bit more truck information for our listeners if you'd like to get back into our road train.
Excellent. All right, now, so let's start with regular trucks.
Regular trucks. Okay, so let me see. I've got the typical stats, I guess, and this is from a place called the Trucker's Report.
Okay.
It's just kind of like a general facts about trucks, semi-engines versus car engines. But I thought it had some pretty interesting comparisons here, and there's about three that I want to mention here in specific. First of all, I mean, these are enormous things. They're often six times larger than a typical car engine in size and in weight. So these are giant, giant engines, right, that power these things, as you would imagine, right?
Yes.
The capacities, I guess. Maybe I'll mention the capacity of the oil, and that'll kind of give you an idea. A typical car takes between 4 and 6 quarts of oil, just a regular car engine. 4 and 6 quarts, it's not very much. I mean, everybody can picture a quart in their,
right,
their mind. It's on the shelf in the garage, whatever. A typical semi-engine holds more than 15 gallons of oil, Ben.
Wow.
15 gallons. So that's enormous. And I know we've talked about, some of these mining trucks that take, 55, gallon drums of oil. But
right,
these things are surrounding us every day. 15 plus gallons of oil in these things. Massive engines. And I think the last thing that I wanted to mention here is the horsepower and torque, because this is what it really comes down to for pulling.
Sure.
Most car engines, and this is just average. I mean, I know there's great variation in this, but just average, maybe 200 horsepower for a car.
I feel like that's fair.
That's fair. I mean, you're talking about like everything from compacts up to sports cars.
Yeah.
Even some of the trucks, the bigger pickup trucks. They have around, 100 to 200 foot pounds of torque. Which is really kind of what we, need for pulling or, you know, the power for that. And for cars, it's more or less just to keep you moving. You're not really hauling, towing, anything with that. So that makes that stat even more important for semis. A typical semi will have around 400 to 600 horsepower. So that's already giant, you know, huge increase. That's just average. But here's where it gets interesting, Ben. The torque on these things, just an average semi, 1 to 2,000 foot-pounds of torque. All the way up to 2,000 foot-pounds of torque.
Wow.
Now, that's like enough to pull your house over.
Yeah, that's just one.
And you can imagine that, you know, they haul these giant loads around, right?
Right.
Well, a road train. I keep forgetting the name of the thing because it's got so many. Power train, a body and six, whatever you want to call it.
A turbine.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say that they've got a 600 horsepower engine up front, right, in the main cab, the trailer that's carrying this thing, or rather tractor that's carrying this thing.
Yeah.
It's got lots of torque, but it just doesn't have quite enough to pull something as long as a road train. So what they do is they add another 400 horsepower Cummins diesel engine in the middle somewhere in another trailer that you don't see really.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that I was mentioning that's controlled with an automatic transmission, usually drive by wire. So they have a total of about 1,000 horsepower, and I can only imagine that also probably doubles the amount of torque. So these things are probably approaching somewhere near 4,000 pound feet of torque at the max. That's a lot of torque, but again, these are massive, massive loads. We mentioned that I think it's up to 200 tons, right, in Australia for some of these things.
Yes.
So they have to have these huge, huge amounts of torque.
And another note on the Australian road trains, I had read, and I don't know if you had read the same thing, that after the limit was passed, you know, in 07,
sure,
that people were tampering with the governor switches.
Really?
Yeah. So they might still be barreling by
at a
slightly higher speed.
Yeah, you know, they do have some speed limits. And we mentioned, you know, that I think recently they've got a newer Australian heavy vehicle limit, which is around 62 miles an hour, about 100 kilometers per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Except I think there's some exceptions in, like, Queensland, South Australia, where it's just about, it's a little lower. So it's like 56 miles per hour or 90 kilometers per hour. And then, like, Western Canada, they have a limit. You know, each place has their own limit. I think in Canada, Western Canada, it's around 62 miles per hour again. And if it's posted, they can go all the way up to about 68 miles per hour, which is like 110 kilometers per hour. So these speed limits for these massive vehicles on the road, they change around quite a bit. I mean, you got to really know your stuff. You got to really know, like, the licensing restrictions.
Yes.
You know, the weight restrictions. You got to know the speed limits. You got to know when it's allowed. You know, if it's a seasonal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of rules and regulations to really be up on in order to operate one of these things.
Yeah, and these people who are driving these are professionals, and like any other driver in a very large vehicle, they are constantly assessing safety. So, one thing that I always want people to know, if you're driving on an interstate or something, you know, there are types of courtesy that you should grant every semi driver.
Sure.
Which,
we've talked about that many times.
We have. And I'm going to talk about it again because I think it's so important.
Sure.
Don't ever cut off the semi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't ever, no matter how much you like hypermiling, I know I sound like somebody's nagging grandma on this part, Scott, but yes, I understand that you can surf the wake of these things and you can get a little bit more efficiency, but is that efficiency worth a car accident?
Don't do it. Yeah, I think we've had a Mythbusters episode on that, right, where they followed at different lengths to see how much they could save, and I think once they got closer and closer, they were like, oh, this, if we weren't in a controlled environment,
this is scary.
There's no way I would be doing this on the highway.
So with that disclaimer, I'm sorry, just to say, this goes double, triple, quadruple, body and six for road trains.
Exactly.
Don't mess with them. They have enough going on. You know, take a picture while they're driving by if you want and you're not in a car.
If you're brave enough to stand there as one passes, because I would guess that one of these things in motion, you know, at 81 miles per hour with seven trailers behind it, oh my gosh, that's got to be just terrifying to see.
I have one thing that we should add, which I think we talked about off air. The United Arab Emirates.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, tell you what, let's make this our one last thing. How about that?
Okay,
one more thing.
One more thing.
Okay, one more thing. the United Arab Emirates are actually using quite a few road trains. They're using something called the ETF haul train.
Mm-hmm.
And the ETF haul train, just like that, weirdly enough, just like that Nazi design we mentioned earlier, these can haul up to 520 U.S. or 1370 metric tons. These look like... They look like something out of a science fiction novel, don't
well,
they?
Well, you know, they look like, to me, yeah, they do look like that. They look like something out of science fiction or something you'd see like as on a Mars, future
Mars mission.
Fantasy
yeah.
mission of some kind, right? They're,
right.
they're amazing looking, these drawings that I'm seeing here.
Yeah.
But the thing about these is that each one of them has its own cab and its own power source. So
yeah.
each single one is powered. Now, just to give you a description of what they're like, each one has five axles on each vehicle, and each of those axles, each of those wheels, each axle has all-wheel drive, all-wheel steering.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to negotiate tight turns, or at least, you know, negotiate turns in long trains like we're talking about. Each one of these can be hooked up to another one in, I would guess, Ben, I'm going to say an unlimited amount, right? I mean, if they're powering themselves, why not?
Yeah, according to the ETF website, these are primarily, they were designed for mining hauls.
Mm-hmm.
According to the ETF website, they say four or more. So theoretically, you can link them all together using a steel arm that has a data cable connecting. So you still drive by wire.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need the first operator in the truck to guide the following trucks, and they'll all be kicking in with, get this, 3,700 horsepower.
Yeah, that's it for each truck.
Each truck, yeah,
each
not total.
Truck. So you start multiplying that by the number of trucks involved, and they say up to four or more.
Yes.
So it's just this massive, massive amount of horsepower, and I'm sure the torque is incredible in these things. There's none listed here. That's why I'm not giving you the numbers. But mm-hmm. They show it on an uphill climb out of an enormous quarry. And again, just one operator at the head of these four vehicles that are steering themselves right out of the quarry. I mean, well,
yep.
he's steering, the driver's steering.
Right, right.
But they're tracking precisely where the lead truck is. They're not varying from that main track at all.
And they have three-way dumping capability. And it's neat because they can, it reminds me of some stuff that robotics professors would tell me about excitedly, which is the idea of smaller units that are able to swarm together
mm-hmm.
because these things can also detach and then go separate ways. If it comes to it, I mean, that is frankly amazing.
This is really cool.
Yeah, I feel old because I didn't know. I mean, you know, I just need to catch up with the time, Scott. And I guess we're on our way out, but one of the things that we should probably leave people with is that if you would like to learn more about road trains, especially in Australia, check out the Australian Road Train Association, formed in 1989. This is where you can learn more about how road trains work, from the nuts and bolts to how they function in Australian industry today. We'd also love to hear from any road train operators, road train builders, people with experience. You can let us know what you think on Facebook. Drop us a line on Twitter. You got one last thing, Scott?
I kind of do. I want to mention, if you're in Australia, you can go to a place called the National Road Transport Hall of Fame in Alice Springs, which is in northern Australia.
Yeah.
And you can check that out. And there's a matter of fact, you can look at the original government road train that gave the idea to Kurt Johansson to build his the first, I guess, official privately owned road train. So
that's
you can see both of those. You can see his train, the government train, and Kurt's road train.
And if you do happen to go there, if you have the opportunity, you know, don't go out of your way, but Scott and I would love some pictures, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Stand inside one of the wheels, you know, that's because these are massive wheel things.
Yeah, that's the good shot. Or the engine. Send us a collection of those photos or just a suggestion for an upcoming topic. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.